Have you ever wondered about the importance of breastfeeding? What to feed children? Have you ever been involved in the controversy about immunizations? Vitamin K shots? Well, controversy in taking care of kids is what we're going to talk about tonight. How to raise a healthy, better child. And it's a sad situation out there. When you look out on the playgrounds, you see the kids, they're fat, suffering from serious problems, snotty noses, ear infections, asthma problems. Is that the way kids are supposed to be? Well, our guest tonight, Dr. Jay Gordon, MD pediatrician. A regular on the Home Show on ABC, can be seen every morning at 10 a.m. Also, he's been a medical consultant for CBC, NBC, and a medical consultant for Empty Nest, and he has a new book coming out soon called Good Food for Today, Great Kids for Tomorrow. Dr. Jay Gordon, nice to have you here.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
What got you stimulated to write a book about kids? I mean, they tell us that children have the best diet possible. They drink lots of milk, eat lots of meat, and I mean, what could be better for you than cupcakes?
What could be better for you than cupcakes? I would say fasting might be better for you than cupcakes. You know, most families do the best they can with their children. I just don't think that they're well enough informed. I think that we have a lot of traditions in America. Our mothers all told us to eat more. That was the best thing to do. They should have told us to eat enough. That's the best thing to do. Our mothers said to drink more milk. They should have told us what was wrong with milk, what's wrong with meat. There are an awful lot of simple answers to the easy questions about nutrition, and that's what I try to do in my practice, and that's what I'm going to try to do in the book.
Well, people don't think that. I mean, they think that the best way they can feed their kids is to feed them lots of milk, to feed them vitamin-enriched bread, to feed them lots of meat. I mean, when I grew up, that's the attitude my family had. I was raised on 4 glasses of milk a day, plenty of meat, canned green beans, and Wonder Bread. And it wasn't a bad idea. I mean, after all...
It was a terrible idea.
Well, if you think about it from a rational point of view, I mean, milk is Mother Nature's most perfect food. And I thought about it in terms of, here I am. I'm meat. And so because I'm meat, then eating meat ought to have everything in it that I need.
Well, the flaw in that reasoning is that you weren't and never will be a cow, and that's why cow's milk was not right for you. Mm. The simplest thing to do is to feed children whole foods. Feed them fruits and juice and grains for breakfast and pack a healthy lunch, which most of them don't eat anyway, so let's be realistic about that. And for dinner, have pasta and fruits and vegetables, just a real clean-looking healthy diet. That's the best way to feed kids. That's the best way for families to eat.
Yeah, but what every mother out there is asking you right now is, where do you get your protein with just pasta?
You get your protein from all the legumes, from the lentils and the garbanzos and the beans. You get your protein from the grains. You can get protein, if you like, from a little bit of dairy. But protein is not difficult to come to find. The average American child, as you know, eats 3 grams of every protein for every 1 gram he or she needs. Triple the amount that we really need. That's got to put a strain on the intestinal tract, on the kidneys. It's an unnecessary waste of protein.
And how about the calcium? I mean, if some of the mothers out there have realized that you can grow elephants and hippopotamuses and giraffes on vegetable foods and probably figure their puny little kids can grow on vegetable foods, but how about the calcium issue?
We're about the only country that emphasizes calcium the way we do, and we're one of the most osteoporotic of countries as we grow older. Calcium's overrated. You can get calcium from dark green vegetables. You can get calcium, again, from a little dairy, even though I'm not a real big fan of dairy. You can get calcium from a lot of foods. Tofu, properly prepared or prepared in one of the various ways, contains a lot of calcium. We don't need as much calcium as we think we need. And if we ate less protein, you see when you, as you know again, John, when you excrete protein wastes, you waste a lot of calcium. To say it simply, somebody who drinks a lot of milk probably needs a lot of milk. If you stop drinking so much milk, you would stop wasting quite so much calcium.
Okay, Dr. Jay Gordon, let's just say I'm convinced. I'm convinced that I can raise my child to get adequate protein, adequate vitamins, minerals, calcium, on the kind of diet you recommend. In other words, I think you're using the V word, vegetarian diet.
My God, the V word.
Is there any reason I shouldn't just continue the American diet? I mean, you know, so what if the child can do fine on a vegetarian kind of diet? I mean, the American diet, it raised me. So shouldn't I just raise my child on the American diet?
You got lucky. And a lot of kids got lucky. But you know, we have epidemics of disease, heart disease, cancer, kidney disease, arthritis. We have epidemics of disease in America.
All right, naming one disease that a child gets from the American diet.
I think I just named 4 of them.
How about constipation?
Constipation. The routine diseases, again, just...
How about tonsillitis?
All of those things. We could eat a lot better. When I talk to my 8 or 9-year-old children, during a checkup. I say to them, you like cars? And they say, yeah, I like Ferraris. Red Ferrari? Okay, a red Ferrari. When you pulled up at the gas tank, you gonna ask for cheap gas and oil? No, not for my Ferrari. And what I tell them is, your Ferrari can't shoot a jump shot. Your Ferrari can't run a mile. You know, put the same kind of fuel into your body that you put into the Ferrari. Go for the best. We can probably grow up okay on processed artificial baby milk. We can probably grow up okay on junk food. And we look about the same, but we're not going to function the same in the short term or the long term.
But there are some real diseases that people are concerned about in terms of the rich American diet that I think a lot of our listeners aren't aware of. Like, for example, juvenile diabetes.
Diabetes is increased in children who drink milk. That's been published now at least 10 or 20 separate times in American literature, British medical literature. There's a protein in cow's milk that triggers an immune response that puts out an antibody which can also attack the pancreatic islet cells. Babies shouldn't drink cow's milk, we all know that. And probably growing children shouldn't drink cow's milk either. As I said to you prior to our being on the air, I'm realistic. I've got an almost 7-year-old daughter who I'm pushing away from dairy. But I'm doing it as gradually and as gently as I can. I also don't believe in saying never to children. I think that you can create a little bit of a childhood backlash.
And besides that, kids are tough. I mean, look what you and I survived on, and we're alive and well in our
We can do better this time, though. We can do better for this generation.
Do you think other pediatricians are starting to get as focused as you are, Dr. Jay Gordon, on the importance of good nutrition in their practice?
No, I do not. I think that most doctors, pediatricians included, pay lip service to good nutritional care. I think that it takes too much time, too much effort. When I have to look somebody right in the eye and say, I don't think your child should be drinking milk, their jaws drop, and thereafter ensues a 10 or 20 minute discussion. Well, I don't think that most pediatricians or most physicians have 10 or 20 minutes to devote to a discussion of nutrition. And I have great fears that in the future, we might not have more than 10 or 20 seconds to devote to a discussion of nutrition.
It's a lot easier to write a prescription, isn't
it? You bet it is.
A lot more cost effective. You can see, 10, 15 children in a pediatrician's office.
Hundreds. By just in
the time it would take to talk to one of them. Do you find that the mothers are responsive?
I find that most of the families are very responsive, and I push.
You push. You take the effort. You are a responsible physician, Dr. Jay Gordon. And I'm Dr. John McDougall, and I'll be back with more information for your good health. And good evening. I'm Dr. John McDougall here for Your Good Health. Jay Gordon, MD, home show resident pediatrician on ABC every morning at 10 a.m. Medical consultant in the past for CBC, NBC, and Empty Nest, and a book coming out soon called Good Food Today, Great Kids Tomorrow. Makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, if you don't start them out well in life, they're going to be in big trouble. How about starting kids out well in life? What's the ideal food for the little tiny ones?
There is only one ideal food, and that's human milk, mom's breast milk. It's custom made for that individual baby, or the baby's custom made for that individual milk. It's a continuation of what was going on in the uterus. It's responsible for decreased incidence of infections, decreased incidence of everything from malignancy to diabetes, just increased great health with breastfeeding. I really worry about the fact that pediatricians don't spend enough time now talking about breastfeeding, and in the future, if there's less time, even fewer kids will be breastfed.
Well, in the hospitals, you're more up to date than I am on this because you deal with it every day. Don't they provide sample packs of formula?
In complete violation of the World Health Organization guidelines, not only do they provide samples, but there's promotional literature available. Very few hospitals have subscribed to the baby-friendly initiative, the idea that this is a breastfeeding hospital and we're going to promote it from labor and delivery to the nursery to all the wards. This isn't being done in most hospitals, again, because it takes time, and the formula industry with their hundreds of millions and billions of dollars have co-opted an awful lot of healthcare professionals.
Well, Dr. Jay Gordon, children are tough, and they seem to do well. I was raised on formula after 3 weeks of my life. After 3 weeks of my life, let me just tell you how bad it was. I was raised on carnation evaporated milk and Karo syrup. That was my diet. So, why should, especially when mothers are busy out there, why should they listen to your advice and go and take the trouble to breastfeed? I mean, are they going to see any real advantage? It's going to just tie them down.
It's real clear, John, if both of us had been breastfed, we'd be a couple of rich orthopedic surgeons instead of being
Because we'd be more intelligent?
Absolutely. We'd be just... No, but seriously, you know, you could... Children grow up just fine on almost any food. They're resilient. But the long-term benefits of breastfeeding are absolutely unquestionable.
Well, you know, you may have just kind of joked about that, but The Lancet, volume 339, page 261, 1992, said that if we'd been breastfed in a normal period of time,
right,
breastfed, we'd be 8.3 points... 8.3 points are, on the average, smarter on our IQ test.
There are some wonderful studies. And in one newborn intensive care unit study, what they did was irrespective of a mother's desire to breastfeed, they randomized children. They set up two groups. One group received breast milk. The other, whether their mothers had chosen to breastfeed or not, somebody pumped milk and these kids got breast milk. And the other group didn't get breast milk. The kids who got breast milk had 7 to 10 IQ points, a 7 to 10 IQ point increase. And this factored out the variable of, is this a motivated family? Will they be paying more attention later? All these kids got was breast milk.
Just from that point of view, it'd be worth it. Let's go to the telephones. John, you have a question about your daughter?
Yes, Dr. McDougall, thank you. And my whole family is on your program, and I have a testimonial to give, but I'll hold that. I'll give that another night, because I do have a question for the doctor. I have a 6-year-old, a 4-year-old, and they're on the McDougal program. I have 11-month-old, and that's where my question is tonight. She was breastfed for 6 months, and she's been on formula, and I'm a little bit concerned about that formula, if that's something that we'd like to get her off of that. But what do I start feeding her? What do we start feeding her now? You know, what kind of food?
That's an excellent question. The health food stores are filled with alternatives. Soy milk, rice milk, almond milk. One thing you need to watch out for, most soy milk is a little bit thin, 5, 6, 8 calories per ounce. And what you need is something that's about 15 to 20 calories per ounce, simulating what a child would have gotten with continued breastfeeding. But there are a lot of alternatives to formula and certainly a lot of alternatives to using milk. I'm not a great proponent of goat's milk either, unless you happen
is
to be a
goat. Is
the soy
formula? Yeah.
The soy formula is not necessary.
No, you're talking about a baby. Okay, at 11 months.
11 months.
I think we need
age.
To clarify this, because
right.
What if you have a baby? There are some people out there that are listening that have babies that are 3 months of age, and
no.
You wouldn't go in and buy rice milk or nut milk for that.
No, this is for a baby who's older than 8 or 9 or 10 months of age.
So what do we do, just to expand on John's question? What do we do for mothers out there who have, for one reason or another, decided that breastfeeding is not going to be the way to go? What do we offer them as an alternative, say, at 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, and so on?
There's only one easy alternative, and that's the commercial infant formulas. You can pick up a lot of books, everything from Paavo Arola's book. You can pick up a lot of books that give you formulas that you can mix at home. I think that if you are not breastfeeding a child under 7 or 8 months of age, the easiest alternative is just to buy a commercial formula. I think
soy or cow-based?
Oh, you know, the problem with the soy-based formulas is that there appear to be some mineral differences that may be detrimental to long-term health. I don't think it makes much difference whether you choose soy or cow's milk-based. If once you've decided not to breastfeed, you've stepped off a steep cliff in terms of good health of a 2-week-old or a 7-month-old infant.
Have you heard about the aluminum contamination of soy milk?
Yes, I have. There are some mineral problems involving aluminum and some other
John,
things.
Did you get your question answered?
Yes, and now when we're getting her onto solid foods, you know, what type of things do we get for her?
Organic fruits and vegetables, organic grains. I can't stress the importance of organically grown foods for babies. Pound for pound, they eat more fruits and vegetables than any other human. They're growing. I don't want to incorporate pesticide residues into those kids. I think that if you avoid strawberries and you avoid citrus and you avoid tomatoes, you can give pureed anything to a child, whether it's cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, or peaches.
What age do you introduce solid food?
About 6 months of age.
6 months of age. Dr. Jay Gordon's my guest. And this show, this hour, is about pediatrics. And I'm Dr. John McDougall, and we'll be back with more information for your good health. Dr. Jay Gordon, MD, he's the home show pediatrician. He can be seen on ABC television, 10 a.m. Has a list of other credits, but a book coming out soon, hopefully by Christmas time. Good food for today, great kids for tomorrow. How about, before we get back to our callers, how about the use of antibiotics in the treatment of ear infections?
Well, you know, the antibiotics work quickly to treat ear infections, but any responsible expert will acknowledge that firstly, 50% of cases of otitis media, middle ear infections, will resolve spontaneously. The eustachian tube opens up, the pus drains, and the ear infection's gone. 50% within a few days. There are other ways of treating ear infections, besides using antibiotics. There are herbal methods, there are homeopathic methods, there are chiropractic manipulations that work. There are some children who need antibiotics for their ear infections, either because their parents want that quick fix or other things have failed.
They expect a drug from the doctor. The Journal of the American Medical Association, 1993, was a September 15th article this year, just a couple of weeks ago. They said antibiotics appear to have a beneficial but limited effect on the recurrent otitis media and short-term resolution of ear infections. Long-term benefit of ear infections has not been shown.
Of antibiotics.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Limited effect. And that's what the Journal of the American Medical Association says. But, I mean, what chance does the mother have with a crying kid in the doctor's office of avoiding the antibiotics, even though she may be concerned about the side effects of antibiotics? It's a tough one.
It's a very tough one. Most people do want quick answers. Most people want the tubes put in kids' eardrums as soon as possible because they know that yields short-term benefits. The long-term benefits of those tubes is extremely questionable.
Yeah, that's a whole other issue, isn't it? That's a whole big controversy. Let's talk to Sarah. Hello, Sarah.
Dr. McDougall and Dr. Gordon. Actually, my original question was about the amount of protein that a child... I have a 9-year-old son, and he has a lot of food allergies. He was breastfed until he was a year.
Good for you.
And then when I tried to take him, when I weaned him and then started putting him on milk, because at the time I didn't know that milk was not good for him, we eventually found out that he had a cow's milk allergy, and so I stopped the cow's milk, and I did try soy milk, which did not agree with him. It was very gassy, and we ended up using goat's milk, which I heard you make the remark a little earlier about not being such a good idea either. But our real problem is that he's allergic to nuts, he's allergic to dairy and to eggs, and so the only remaining protein source other than tofu is grains and beans combined, and then animal proteins. And it's been very difficult. He does like some forms of tofu, which
Sarah,
is good, but
how old is he again?
The beans is the hard part. It's hard to get children to eat a variety of beans and legumes.
Sarah, how old is he again?
He's nine.
9 years old. And I mean, this is, of course, a child is, you know, well past the time of milk. Should she be worried about the protein?
I do not think you should be at all worried about protein. Offer your child a really good diet. Fruits, vegetables, beans, and grains. Lots of pasta.
Is there protein in oranges?
Very little protein in
oranges. Is there protein in rice?
There is a significant amount of protein in all of the grains.
Lettuce?
Very little.
Broccoli?
Very little.
So you think grains and beans are the way to go?
Absolutely. And you know, your job...
So you're talking about a starch-based diet, aren't you?
I'm talking about what would be called a starch-based diet, but the fact is that there's enough protein in there, especially if you put in the legumes. Now, if your child refuses to eat or is a picky eater, all you have to do is sit back and wait. The human body balances the diet over a period of 30 to 60 to 90 days. The diet won't look so hot over a week or 2 weeks, but if you offer these foods and you stop offering bad or questionable foods, your child will eat. We don't need to drink milk. We really don't.
Sarah, thank you very much for calling. Dr. Gordon, how many cases of protein deficiency have you seen this week?
I have seen zero cases.
Zero cases. I don't think any other pediatrician has either. Dr. Jay Gordon, my guest, and let's go back to the phone calls. Fran, hello.
Hi.
You're on with Dr. Jay Gordon.
Thank you. I'm a mother of a mother, so that makes me the grandmother of a baby who did not tolerate breast milk at birth. She was born at 3 pounds. I nursed my daughter, and she was producing milk very nicely, but the baby developed a blood in her stool, and they decided she couldn't take any kind of animal protein, including human. So they have her on Nutramigen. She seems to be doing okay. And I wonder if there's any special consideration we should know about as they tell my daughter how to nurture her, you know, on into her infancy.
How old is this baby?
She's 4 months old. She's up to 9 pounds, 14 ounces at this point, and seems to be doing quite well. Her bowel movements, I don't like the look of, but, you know, she's been such a tricky baby that we have to pretty much do whatever the doctors tell us to.
Good for you and your daughter for dealing with this very difficult situation.
Well, she's a wonderful baby.
Much of the time that blood appears in a baby's stool, it has to do with something that the mother ate. Primarily, and boy, I hate to sound one note on this piano, primarily cow's milk. If a mother drinks a lot of cow's milk, it can create a sensitivity and bleeding in the baby's intestines. However, a 3-pound preemie can have very sensitive intestines to begin with.
They had told my daughter to drink milk. Up to that point, she had been a vegetarian and did not drink much cow's milk at all, if any.
Strike one up
and
for the
baby. They had told her to be sure and drink it, you know, as she was getting ready to deliver the baby.
You know, they did the best they could, but they were missing some basic nutritional knowledge.
So that will be her consideration, certainly, on her next baby.
Well, I'll tell you something. If she would like to, she can relactate. Within 3 to 5 days, she can induce breast milk. She puts the baby to the breast, she gets a pump, she can rent one of those big electric pumps, and she can bring breast milk back in. This might not be the answer for everybody. It might not be the answer for her, but it's very doable. It's not a rare occurrence. A lactation consultant could help her do it.
Like lychee.
They've warned us that there might be a chance of anaphylactic shock if they do that, and
well,
it sounds like a very risky situation for the baby.
Very far from a risky situation. If a baby is tolerating Nutramigen, a baby is going to tolerate breast milk as long as the mother is careful with her diet. But if this isn't the answer for her, then she should stick with Nutramigen. I don't like changing something that's working. Baby's growing beautifully on Nutramigen. If she'd like to bring her breast milk back in, this is something she and other women should think about. But if not, I don't like to change something that's working. Your grandchild is growing beautifully, it sounds like.
And Fran, the Lychee League will help your daughter with that. Thank you very much for calling. Let's talk to Maggie. Hello, Maggie.
Hi. I have an almost 2-year-old who I've nursed since birth, and I just found out I was pregnant. Went to the obstetrician, and he told me to wean him. And I thought, that doesn't sound right. I mean, my son's been healthy as an ox, and I'm not ready to do that, and yet he's insisted upon it. Do you have some thoughts on that?
I have a lot of thoughts on that. That's why we don't let obstetricians take care of babies except when they hand them over to the pediatrician. Then they have to keep their hands off the babies. You should breastfeed all through the pregnancy if you like. You should stop if you want to. It's better for your first child to be a nursing baby through pregnancy and when this baby's delivered, because it's really going to help with that transition. 2-year-olds are not thrilled about having siblings around. There is no good medical reason to wean your 2-year-old. You're going to have to take good care of yourself. You're going to have to eat well and keep yourself in good health. But this breastfeeding does not destabilize a pregnancy or wear you down terribly. This is a myth that dies very hard.
He said something about could cause premature contractions.
Right, and you know that's the myth that's been floating around. Having intercourse causes a lot more premature contractions than breastfeeding. And this is not an endorsement of ceasing intercourse nor breastfeeding during pregnancy.
Okay,
right.
And thank you very much for calling, Maggie. You get away with recommending not breastfeeding a lot more easily than recommending not having intercourse. Right?
Absolutely.
That would be much more acceptable to society.
Yes.
Let's talk to Lou. Hello, Lou.
Hello. I want to ask 2 questions. First one is there any relationship between sudden death infant syndrome and diet and not being on breast milk? Also, the disease of progeria in babies, could that be related to diet? Is there any new evidence of what causes that?
Progeria, I don't believe, is related in any way to breastfeeding. I think that's one of those lightning bolts that just occurs. I'm not aware of any new research. Sudden infant death syndrome is increased in non-breastfeeding babies. Every time I speak on the air about sudden infant death syndrome, I get letters, often unpleasant letters. How dare you make our daughter feel guilty? Her baby died of crib death, and you're saying that there was something she could have done about it. I feel terrible about that, but I'm thinking about the babies tomorrow. I'm thinking about the babies who are not born yet. Crib death kills 25, 26 babies a year in America. If we would stop smoking, if we would breastfeed more often, if we would sleep near our infants, there would be less crib death.
25, 26,000 babies a year.
No, 25 or 26 babies a day, I believe.
A day.
Did
okay.
I say a year? Pardon me.
There you go.
That's, yeah.
Can I ask one other question? Would a dairy product like yogurt or Acidophilus milk, could that substitute for regular milk? If a person can't give breast milk?
It could substitute for regular milk, but it doesn't substitute for breast milk. There is no substitute for breast milk. The formula manufacturers have put together an artificial baby milk that's the same color as breast milk, but it's there's really no comparison.
Thank you for calling, Lou.
Thank you.
Let's talk to Sarah. Hello, Sarah. You're on with Dr. Jay Gordon. Hello, Sarah.
Are you talking to me?
Yes. Are you Sarah?
No, I'm Catherine.
Well, Catherine, it's great to have you on the show.
Yeah, okay. Well, I know that fruits and vegetables are very important. I've got a 2-year-old, and he will not eat any fruits and vegetables. He basically eats grains, nuts, fruit juice, soy milk. I try to hide them in things. He picks them out.
Attaboy.
They're scary, aren't they?
I'm a vegetarian. I began eating broccoli when I was 30 years old. Let me tell you that I think I grew up eating canned corn and iceberg lettuce.
Our diet will balance itself.
The diet will balance itself. You don't have to make a menu with six entrees for every evening meal. Make a nice evening meal, and if your child wants it, fine. And if not, trust the intelligence of the human child's body. Don't worry at all about vegetables.
And the times about a couple weeks ago that said, keep presenting it, don't make a big deal. I do keep presenting it.
He keeps throwing it back at you.
I'm very concerned because, you know, he's not getting all the nutrients from the fruits and vegetables, the calcium, everything. He takes Poly-Vi-Flor. That's what I think is helping him.
He's getting all the nutrients he needs. And by the way, Poly-Vi-Flor has almost nothing in it except for probably enough fluoride if you need fluoride. But you don't have to worry about vegetables. Children will eventually eat them. And the more pressure that we put on the kids, the less likely it is that they'll eat them. And you know, there's this particularly American affliction where we say, we want you to eat this stuff you don't like in order to get at the stuff that's not good for you. Eat some broccoli and we'll give you some ice cream. That's going to put a thought in a child's mind that could last for the child's whole life. You know, here's some broccoli, eat the broccoli. We don't have any ice cream.
Catherine, here's a tip for you. With our kids, because they were afraid of the vegetables, we'd take the spaghetti sauce and we put it in the blender and grind it up so they couldn't see them. Mm-hmm. You can try that with a lot of your foods. Just the blender will hide it so they can't even see them. Thank you very much for calling. I'm Dr. John McDougall here for Your Good Health. My guest, Dr. Jay Gordon, and let's talk to Beverly. Hello, Beverly.
Hi. I'm calling. I have a almost 3-year-old little girl, and I nursed her until she was 2.5 years old. And she does not drink milk at all, and I never worried too much about it, and after hearing your show, I won't give another thought, but I did want to say that my pediatrician has been real supportive in that. She told me not to worry about that, about her not drinking milk, that, you know, her diet would even out. But what I called about is that you'd made the comment that why would you want to go to the trouble of breastfeeding, and I just wanted to say that I think there is a myth out there that breastfeeding is a lot of trouble, and the fact is, for me, it was no trouble at all. I never washed a bottle or bought a bottle of formula or sterilized a bottle, and it was very easy. And I think that, you know, women need to know that it is very easy.
If one of us said something about going to the trouble of breastfeeding, we misspoke ourselves.
It was a misunderstanding. You have two very strong proponents here of breastfeeding. This would take a long time to read through. I don't know whether you've seen this, Dr. Jay Gordon, but it's called True Breast.
Yes, I have seen that. There is no substitute for breastfeeding, and you know, you are certainly to be respected and admired for continuing breastfeeding in the face of the many adverse comments that I'm sure you got as the second and third year wore on. And now your child obviously has inherited your intelligence and is avoiding cow's milk. Good for both of you.
Dr. Gordon, one of the issues of great controversy comes up all the time and is almost always suppressed by good medical doctors, is the concern of immunizations. Do the kids need them? Are they properly timed? Are there hazards that could be avoided? Are there better ways to do immunizations? Should they be avoided completely? What kind of stand do you take as a pediatrician and also as a national celebrity in terms of immunizations?
My mother loves hearing me called a national celebrity. I think that vaccines do more good than harm. I think that as an American policy, we probably shouldn't change much. But whether or not for each individual child, each individual vaccine holds more good than harm, I do not know. I vaccinated my daughter with most of the vaccines. I vaccinate the people in my practice. But I can tell you that I have some reluctance to give the hepatitis B vaccine to infants. I have some reluctance giving the pertussis vaccine without a good, clear discussion of the problems. I think that as you said, what is suppressed is the controversy, the fact that these vaccines do have some downside, and we should be honest with our patients and trust their intelligence rather than being patronizing, as doctors are used to doing.
What do you tell the mother who comes in and says, look, I feed my kids well, I breastfeed my children, I don't want to give them immunizations, but I can't get them into school unless they have them?
Well, firstly, in the state of California, you can get a child into school. You can sign a waiver saying, for my own personal reasons, I've chosen not to vaccinate my child. The public schools cannot refuse you. The private schools can. But I'm not sure that's the answer, because when you don't give a child full tetanus immunity, and 2 or 3 years later that child steps on a rusty nail near the horse stables, people call me up and they say, what are the chances my child's going to get tetanus from this wound? They are scared. And I say, the chances are almost zero. Now, I've used the word tetanus a potentially fatal disease, and the word almost in the same sentence. I don't like doing that. So they have to go to the emergency room, they get hypertet, the gamma globulin injection, then they have to get the tetanus series anyway. I'm not comfortable with children who are unimmunized against tetanus. On the other hand, a fair number of people in my practice have chosen to take that responsibility, and I respect their intelligence, I respect the reading that they've done, and I back off.
Pertussis vaccine.
The worst of our vaccines is a pertussis vaccine. Until recently, it was a relatively impure vaccine. We now have a much better vaccine approved for children 15 or 16 months of age and up. There are side effects to that pertussis vaccine, and when we deny that, as has been done in the Journal of the American Medical Association at least twice, when we deny that there are side effects, we're risking our patients not trusting us at all. A very small percentage of children, perhaps 1 in 250,000, perhaps it's only 1 in 1,000,000, can have permanent damage from that vaccine. 1 out of every 2 children get a fever or get cranky. And that vaccine is the least effective. And at this time, as we speak, I have at least 2 or 3 children in the practice with bad cases of whooping cough. They're up all night. They've been up all night for 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks at a time. They're miserable. Their parents are miserable. Their lives are not endangered right now. But this is a miserable illness. And I wish I had a vaccine. I wish I had a pertussis vaccine I was proud of. Right now, I do not. I have a vaccine that I give with some trepidation.
I'm Dr. John McDougall, my guest, Dr. Jay Gordon, and let's go back to the telephones. Tina?
Hi, good evening. I have a question for you regarding over-the-counter vitamins prescribed by my pediatrician. I have a 16-month-old daughter who's on Polyvisol and a fluoride supplement. What are your thoughts on that? Should we remove her from that and she gets enough nutrients in her food, or...
I recommend health food store vitamins for kids. Health food store vitamins for children 12 months and up. And the reason is that most of the commercial pediatrician prescribed vitamins don't have a lot of vitamins in them. The dose isn't. They're really not worth giving.
Okay.
Fluoride should not be given to children under 2 years of age.
Ah.
And the newest recommendation is that we give fluoride to children 4 years and up. That recommendation has not been published yet, but it will be out within the next couple of years. And the reason is that there is so much fluoride contaminating our food chain that children are getting too much fluoride. You know, when you see these ads for toothpaste and they show a double ribbon of toothpaste, that's about 2 weeks worth of fluoride. Children eat toothpaste. I will only prescribe fluoride to people who firstly want it and secondly will guarantee me that their children are not eating toothpaste and thirdly who are only using organically grown fruits and vegetables and juices. Welsh's grape juice has something like 7 or 8 parts per billion of fluoride in it because of the pesticide residues. Anyway, if you're going to give fluoride to your children, get some substantial doses.
Thank you for calling, Tina. Let's go to Patricia. Hello, Patricia.
Yes, hi. I'm breastfeeding my 6-month-old, and I was wondering, what can I do to produce good quality milk, especially with respect to my intake of calcium?
Is it important that she eats a healthy diet when she's breastfeeding?
Absolutely. You're a restaurateur while you're breastfeeding, and I think it's very important that you eat an excellent diet. I don't think that you have to avoid cabbage and cauliflower and broccoli, but I can tell you that at least half the babies around are sensitive to cow's milk coming through your breast milk. A fair number of babies are sensitive to peanuts. Some are sensitive to eggs. And you've got a real wonderful laboratory. Take a look at how your baby responds to your diet.
Well, he has had problems when I've drank cow's milk, so I've avoided cow's milk ever
Bingo.
Since I was born. But I'm concerned now about my intake of calcium.
No, I agree with you. You need to be concerned about calcium, but you don't need to drink milk. Again, you can go to a good health food store and get calcium supplements. Take 1,500 milligrams or 2,000 milligrams. Most of the obstetricians recommend Tums. That's probably not a bad idea, but you do not need milk to get calcium.
How many cows do you know that take calcium?
I have met very few cows who take calcium supplements.
No, I wonder how they make milk.
I don't know how it works.
Thank you very much for calling, Patricia. And so let's talk to Sheila. Hello, Sheila.
Hi. I'm 18 weeks pregnant. I'm 41, and it's my first baby. I'm very conscious about what I eat. However, I feel really bad. I had 2 Cokes today, and I have coffee maybe 3 or 4 times a week. I have maybe 1 cup. How bad is caffeine?
Can you give us a quick answer on that?
A quick answer is during these 9 months, eat the best you can. Avoid caffeine. Avoid Coke. Have you hurt your baby? No way. But now just do better for the rest of the pregnancy. Do the best.
I hope this kind of information, Dr. J. Gordon, really makes an impact on people because, you know, when you're pregnant and when you have little children, you're very sensitive. You can do anything to yourself. You know, you can go on a grapefruit diet or a, you know, a liquid protein diet, but taking care of the little ones, very emotional, and people resort back to the common information.
Exactly. We, you know, we've got this huge mountain of scientific evidence. We've got this thimble full of folk wisdom that our parents gave us about eating, and we use the thimble. We ignore the mountain of scientific evidence that says you can feed your children better. You don't need the traditional American diet.
Well, you certainly have a dynamic message, and you can certainly present it in an excellent way. I want to thank you very much, and people
thank
will tune
you.
In and listen to you on the Home Show.
Yes, and I appreciate this opportunity, John. Thanks
and his
again.
New book, Good Food Today, Great Kids Tomorrow.